You're listening to Your Best Life, powered by Mercy One. Join us as we have a fun conversation with certified experts and physicians about health topics for you and your family. It's Your Best Life, our one purpose.
Hi, everybody, and thanks for listening. Today, in this episode, we welcome back Mercy One infectious disease specialist, Dr. Ravi Vamuri, for an update on the pandemic in February 2022. Today, we'll talk about what we've learned from this most recent wave and the tools we have available, like two fully FDA-approved vaccines and the importance of going back to get your booster shot. And Dr. Vamuri will let us know when he considers us to be back to normal. So once again, Dr. Vamuri, welcome, and thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it. A hello to all the listeners out there.
So I'd like to just open up, Dr. Vamuri. What have we learned coming out of this most recent wave, and where are we at exactly?
Yeah. So I think what we learned is that Omicron was approximately six times more contagious than Delta. Unlike Delta, we learned that previously vaccinated individuals got infected at a much higher rate than during the Delta surge. There are several reasons for that, and I'll get into that in a minute. And then what we also learned is it was truly a milder infection for those that were vaccinated. Now, for unvaccinated people, unfortunately, it still was a fairly severe infection. This surge started almost as soon as the Omicron was announced by South Africa a few months ago. They were the first ones to detect it, and it became rapidly detectable in Europe. And then at astonishing speed, within the first week of the first cases being detected here, as soon as people knew what to look for, it was popping up all over the place. And it rapidly overtook Delta as the predominant variant out in circulation. So we peaked nationally and here in Iowa around, I would say, maybe January 16th. For example, on that date, if you looked at the data nationally, we were having about 800,000 new cases per day. That was the running seven-day average on January 16th. And then since then, we've had a very steep downslope. And today, as of February 17th, that number is hovering around somewhere around 150,000. So a dramatic drop, both in new cases and in hospitalizations as well. Now, having said that, even though the new admissions have dropped substantially, unfortunately, our hospitals still have a lot of COVID patients in them, because amongst the people that got hospitalized during the surge, the vast majority of them were either unvaccinated or vaccinated but not boosted. And those vaccinated and not boosted people had one or two comorbidities, which made the illness more severe. And so it is this cohort of people that, unfortunately, many of those that got seriously ill are lingering in the hospital for extended periods of time, thus keeping our numbers high. So overall, new hospitalizations are coming down, but we still have plenty of patients suffering from the effects of and after effects of COVID lingering in the hospital. So when people say, oh yeah, it's a milder variant, it's milder for extremely healthy, you know, youngish people who perhaps even didn't get vaccinated or maybe got natural immunity from a previous Delta infection. And it is mild for people who have been vaccinated. And it's the most mildest for people who have been vaccinated and boosted. But unfortunately, for the totally unvaccinated, even if they had infection early in the pandemic, these individuals got severely ill, a significant proportion of them. And countless numbers of people, unfortunately, we've seen pass away during this latest surge who were in their 40s, 50s, early 60s, you know, people that absolutely did not really need to get this severely ill, but unfortunately they did. And I think it's all because they weren't vaccinated. I mean, the data is pretty clear on that.
Yeah, and we know that the COVID infection impacts more, what the pandemic impacts more than just the people that are infected with COVID. It also carries over into other areas of care. We know that people who needed cancer screenings were not getting screenings at the rate that we usually like to see. It bleeds over into other areas of care. Can we briefly talk about that?
Absolutely. That's an excellent point that you bring up. So-called delayed care or deferred care has been a huge problem during this pandemic. So let us say, you know, I'm a 55-year-old who's maybe obese, and I had a little bit of chest pain. So I managed to get in to see my cardiologist. They did, let's say they did a stress test, and now maybe even I got an angiogram and they think that I need a bypass surgery, not urgently or emergently, but, you know, sooner, better sooner than later. But because the hospital ICUs were so full with patients requiring care for COVID, a lot of hospitals had to defer or delay a lot of these semi-elective surgeries. Now, you know, they weren't emergent, but they weren't ones that could be delayed forever either. Same goes for things like, you know, maybe some sort of tumor was found on colonoscopy. It's not highly invasive, patient's not too symptomatic, but you know, you don't want to be sitting on that for weeks and weeks either. You want to get that out as quickly as possible. So those are kind of examples of so-called deferred or delayed care. And a number of academic investigators have published papers looking into this. And definitely the nation has suffered a lot from all of this delayed and deferred care. And that's just amongst the adults. There's been a lot of suffering amongst the pediatric population. There's been huge swaths of pediatric patients who unfortunately are off on their vaccination schedules for all the other diseases that kids need to be vaccinated against. And that's been well studied as well. So the pandemic not only affected the people that actually got infected, but as we know, you know, it just caused so much havoc in just about every sphere of our life.
Well, and the good news is that we have tools available to make the situation better. And we now have two fully FDA-approved vaccines, with both Pfizer and Moderna having FDA-approved vaccines. And I know I've seen out there, there are new antivirals, I think, are in the form of pills. We have more tools now than we've had ever before to help address this problem.
Yes, we do. So our most potent and powerful tools are the vaccines. They clearly are the stars of this pandemic. Now, unfortunately, you know, the rollout, although all kinds of people made all kinds of efforts to get as many people vaccinated as possible, there was a lot of unnecessary and unneeded controversy swirling around them. And, you know, various groups of people found all kinds of excuses not to get them. And unfortunately, it's those groups of people then that got infected and put other people at risk by getting infected. So, you know, an advanced country like ours, and you know, the vaccines were actually developed here, you know, taxpayer money went into purchasing them, and it was, and they were free of cost to anyone that wanted them. And despite all of that, and despite all kinds of efforts to get them rolled out, we are still sitting at a very disappointing 64% of the population that's fully vaccinated. So clearly, there's, you know, 36% of the population is not considered protected. And when you have that number of people still unprotected, yeah, this current Omicron surge is probably waning, and thank goodness it is. But when you have a large pool of still unvaccinated people, eventually, even if those people got naturally infected, that natural infection immunity eventually is going to wane. And unless you boost it with some vaccination, you're going to have a pool of susceptible people who then are going to perpetuate the next variant that comes around. And it invariably will show up. And that's problematic. We need to worry about that. People talk about transitioning from pandemic to endemic. And we can do that transition a lot better if we have more immune people. Now, you know, we might still get there with the 64% fully vaccinated because so many people got natural infection, including, you know, large chunks of people who didn't get vaccinated. But, you know, nobody really knows how long this immunity will last. And we don't know how effective it's going to be for the next variant. So when we have these free vaccines, we have all the supply that we can use. It just makes sense for people to protect themselves and their community by stepping up and getting vaccinated. We've given billions of doses. They have very excellent safety profile. These are probably the most used medications in the history of mankind in such a short period of time. Billions and billions of doses have been given throughout the world. And for people who worry about adverse events, I mean, you're never going to get a situation where so many people have tried it before you try it. So like, if there's still some fence sitters out there worried about this, that, and the other adverse event, I mean, look at all the people that have gotten it. One, two, now three shots. Some people even gotten four, those that are immunocompromised. And it's been found to be uniformly safe. So yeah, the tools are there. The knowledge is there. And hopefully, you know, obviously we all hope that this surge, which is now waning, gets to a point where it's persistent and we don't have another surge. But it sure would be nice if we got our vaccination percentage up to the 90% range. And then we can pretty much almost count on it being, you know, pretty endemic at that point and not capable of perhaps being a pandemic. But that would just be in this country, of course. Worldwide, we're still woefully inadequate. As long as there's susceptible people throughout the world, there's potential risk. But, as the years wane on here, I think the more people throughout the world that get vaccinated, the less of a problem this will be. I mean, it'll always be a problem, but it won't be as severe of a problem as we witness. It won't bring life to a standstill or society to a standstill, but like it's done for the past 2 years.
We're about a year, well, more than a year now. We're more than a year now into the vaccination process where we've had this available to us. And you mentioned the percentage of Americans that are currently considered up to date, fully vaccinated. And I feel like that percentage goes down more when you consider the number of Americans that have gone back to then get booster shots. But there is more and more data that shows the effectiveness of getting that booster shot.
Absolutely. So the last time I looked at the numbers, unfortunately, apparently only about 36% of Americans that are eligible for a booster have gotten a booster. And we are witnessing this in the hospital during this recent surge. Not only did we see a lot of unvaccinated people get admitted, but we saw what are considered fully vaccinated and eligible for booster, but not boosted. We saw a significant percentage of those people getting infected, not nearly as high as unvaccinated, and they didn't get nearly as sick as the unvaccinated, but they still did end up in the hospital. And some of those people did progress to more severe illness, especially if they had one or two comorbidities. And then if you looked at the fully vaccinated and boosted population, that was the population that had the least number of hospital admissions. So the boosting really worked. And then, of course, people always have the question, you know, will we need another booster? Well, it's too early to know that. We might, but we don't have the answer right at the moment. as time goes on here, we will definitely have the answer. But at the moment, 2 + 1 seems to be the ideal combination.
While we're on the topic of vaccination, we're getting close to having virtually every American eligible to get a shot, with another age group close to being able to be vaccinated, and that would be for children under 5. Where are we at with that?
Yeah. So one company, Pfizer, did make an application to the FDA, I think within the past 10 days, asking for emergency use authorization. But unfortunately, they didn't have the complete data set yet. They were asking for emergency use authorization based on data that they submitted for the two-shot Pfizer vaccine. And experts in the field soon realized for this age group, this is probably needs to be a three-shot vaccine. And but they only had the data, I believe, for the two shots. And they're still collecting the third shot data. So I think in general, regulators are very careful, especially in the pediatric population. They want to see the full data. And as that Pfizer third shot data rolls in, hopefully it'll be favorable. Most people expect that it will be favorable. And then the FDA will review it and then give a ruling.
Well, I think that kind of speaks to just all the measures that are being taken into account to make sure all of the safety considerations and the willingness to wait a little longer for that data. I think that only speaks to more of the same that we've been talking about, of all the things that go into place when considering when to roll it out and the safety conversation and so on.
Yeah. So for people who are concerned that, you know, these things have come too quickly, you know, there's, we didn't study them long enough. This is a prime example of, where the company was pushing it. They were fairly confident, but the FDA said, well, wait a minute. Well, show us the data. We need to see the data. We're responsible for protecting the public. We need to see the full data set. So people that have children in that age group, they were eagerly waiting for it. So they're a bit disappointed. But I think they should also be reassured that, the FDA is doing its job and waiting for the full data to be available.
Well, let's move on into some other aspects of the pandemic, and that is for the people that have been infected. And, you know, it's not always the period of a couple weeks and then you're done with it and move on. That's not true for everyone. And there's what we know and refer to as long COVID, where you're dealing with issues from that infection for weeks, months, even longer. So can you speak a little bit about long COVID, how that stays with you? And then I know we were talking a little bit before we started recording about a new study, nationwide study that is going on to look at long COVID a little more in depth.
Yes. So so-called long COVID, people who get COVID infection, even mild infection, even relatively young, perfectly healthy people are now showing up in doctor's offices maybe weeks to months after the acute infection, maybe even relatively low symptom infection, with persistent nagging problems having to do with things like fatigue, cough, shortness of breath, so-called fog or mental fog, not being able to think as crisply and sharply as they were before. So all of these things fall into this category of long COVID. And so the NIH, recognizing that, we need to study this and we need to study it in a formal way, teamed up with an academic medical center, I think based in Brooklyn, and came up with a study protocol to formally study the so-called long COVID. And this is a nationwide study. And for example, any primary care provider, any physician that is seeing a patient that has long COVID can access the NIH website, download the particulars of the study and offer their patient a chance to enroll in this study and to be part of this database that they're collecting. In order to understand sometimes these nebulous things that aren't so straightforward, you need to study a lot of people, and you need to study them in a rigorous, formal manner. You can't just depend upon, physicians' anecdotes, or you need to study them prospectively, and you need to study them in a controlled fashion. So this protocol that was developed by the NIH and this institution in New York attempts to do that. So any physician that's interested in entering their patient into the study is able to do it. And, it involves some paperwork and some time and effort. But, if patients are interested, they should go to their physician and ask if they can participate in this NIH study. I think that would be a good thing. And the more diverse number of people and the more regions of the country we have participating in the study will make the study that much more valuable.
All this work really to know more about how the pandemic impacts us, the more we can find out about our tools to move forward, it all leads back to us getting back to what most of us would call a normal way of life. And now that we are in this stage of the pandemic, just to kind of wrap up here, if we had to speak to when do you feel like we can get back to normal? And I know that there's more to that than go ahead.
Yeah. So that's a great question. So people ask me that all the time, when are we going to be normal again? So, that's a multifaceted question. And it just depends upon a lot of factors. One of the more important factors is, some of the metrics that various organizations, the CDC, various universities follow. The metric that I like to follow is the so-called 7-day moving average of active new cases per 100,000 population. So I was just looking at this data earlier this morning. For the country as a whole, we're somewhere in the mid-40s is the 7-day moving average of active new cases per 100,000 population. And this state of Iowa as a whole is also in a similar point on that number. They were about 44 or 43. Now, the various counties vary widely. For example, I'm in Polk County. We're much higher than that. We're at 62.9. So we're still having high community transmission. So if people can remember back to the last week of May 2021 and the first week of June 2021, people were saying, oh my God, we're at the end of the pandemic. It's in the rearview mirror. It's over. Well, that was before Delta showed up. And we were doing very well. The number for Polk County got to as low as 4 active new cases, 7-day moving average per 100,000 population. That's almost in the green zone. That's in the very low yellow zone. So anything above 25 is still considered red. So the long-winded answer to your question is, I would say that if we can stay below 10 active new cases per 100,000 population for 2 consecutive weeks, that is when, I would take off my mask and walk around the grocery store and feel fairly comfortable at that point. So that means community transmission is very low. I've been double vaccinated. I mean, I've had 2 shots and I've had my booster, so I would feel comfortable. Now, I'm still not comfortable now because Polk County is still around 62, 63 per 100,000 population. And the Iowa average is 44. So, anywhere in Iowa, people should still practice mitigation measures. So we're not anywhere near normal. We're heading there. We can see the light at the tunnel, end of the tunnel, but we're still in the tunnel. We're not out of the tunnel yet. We hope to get there here in the next month, maybe.
Well, perfect. Well, I hope that the next time that we are able to talk like this, we're able to talk more freely about it being in the rearview mirror and can wrap it up. I know we'll be learning about all this stuff for years to come, but. Once again, I want to say thanks to Mercy One infectious disease specialist, Dr. Ravi Vamiri, our sixth episode with Dr. Vamiri as we've walked through the last 2 years of the pandemic. Thanks again for joining us. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Nope. I think we covered it all. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Send us your feedback by emailing podcast@mercyhealth.com, or you can find us on our website, mercyone.org/podcast. There you can find a submission form to enter in your questions or general feedback, and you can also find all of our other episodes. Thanks again for listening. Keep living your best life.